TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg.
Good save, Pavlik, rebound.
Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets, a division of Bell Media.
If you want to know the real deal about the three, we're going to take it with triple chops, we're going to bring you up to speed.
Tomorrow, the market opens. Today, TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, NHL Free Agency Preview, with Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg on TSN 1290.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba, and for all those joining us online at tsn1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Legal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezzy. I must say, it's a big day already. Normally, the intro introduces you as the Beav, so you're already moving up in the world that you're not even being introduced as Ezra Ginsberg as the Beav.
Yes, that's right. I get a first name, I get a last name. That's great. And that's awesome. We got the Beastie Boys as our intro now.
Well, I'm just happy you're
somebody here is listening. Shout out to Rack.
Triple Trouble, I think, is very, you know, it's very apropos. Yeah.
Isn't it perfect? It's perfect. We should have that intro all along, so
it's
pumped
good.
Up about that.
Exactly. The whole new intro. It's a whole new world here at the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big day in store for you on the program this morning. As the intro said, it is our Illegal Curve NHL free agency preview show ahead of tomorrow's opening of the free agency world in the NHL. Will be live on air 9 a.m. start time tomorrow from the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe. Coming up on the program this morning, the Washington Capitals play-by-play man, Joe Beninati, is going to join us. Coming up at 10 a.m., Kevin Allen from USA Today is going to join us. Following Kevin from the Columbus Dispatch, Aaron Portsline is going to join us. And then the final guest, Mike Colligan. Covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for HockeyWriters.com and Forbes.com. It is a jam-packed show for you. Let's get into it. Start with the Winnipeg Jets. They made their... not controversial, because that's not the right word. But the player that, if you had to pick one guy who's probably going to be the most difficult to sign because of his arbitration eligibility and things of that nature, that's Andrei Pavlik. They got him done earlier this week. 5 years, $19.5 million. Average annual value, salary cap hit of $3.9 million per year. Let's go around the table. We'll start with that. Richard?
Drew, I'd say I think Kane's a more difficult signing. But in terms of Pavlik signing...
Even without his arbitration rights?
Yeah, I think it makes it more difficult, because if worse comes to worse, you end up with Pavlik at arbitration. Here, Kane can't go to arbitration, so you...
But he's got no leverage.
I realize, but the Jets also don't have, you know, there's a means to an end, and you have to pay him a certain amount or he doesn't play for you. So it goes both ways. I understand your point. The Pavlik deal, I think, was... It was a lot of money. I wrote about how much I think it should have been in terms of a 5-year deal. I thought it was about $500,000 too much per year. And market, in terms of the market, in terms of a reasonable position from both sides based on what goaltenders are making in the National Hockey League, not taking into account if you don't value goaltenders that high. So 3.4 years what I had it at in February. If I'm Cheval Dayoff, I probably wouldn't have gone past four.
4 years?
Yeah, 4 years. 4 years at a little bit less. But, you know, it is what it is. And I think Andrei Pavlik now has to prove that he's the goalie that some people think he is.
Would you rather have Andrei Pavlik at $3.9 million per year on a salary cap hit, or Corey Schneider at $4 million?
Obviously Corey Schneider. Corey Schneider, I think the Jets brass, if you put some truth serum in them, would say Corey Schneider as well. Now, Corey Schneider doesn't necessarily have the quote-unquote track record, and by track record I mean games played, because his numbers are better than Pavlik. But also, he plays for a better team, they control the puck more, and there's many other factors that go into it. But Pavlik's deal, it was, I think, one of the things the Jets are paying for is to prove that players want to play here and they're not going to cheap out on players. And the one issue I have with the money is, you know, people say, oh, whatever, it's another $500,000 a year. For example, what I think he's worth in the market as it stands on a 5-year deal. But if you overpay as a $500,000 on, say, 4 or 5 players to get rid of that quote unquote, you know, stigma that there is of surrounding Winnipeg, which I'm not necessarily sure exists, what does that cost you on 4 or 5 players? It costs you a $2.5 million player. So you have to draw the line somewhere.
And even with the fact that teams are overspending. Some of the contracts that were given out over the last 3 days, you got to shake your head. You know, specifically, Dennis Wiedemann getting $5 million a year from the Calgary Flames. But, Richie, I think that there's a few things to consider with the Andrei Pavlik signing. I think you can't just straight up compare Andrei Pavlik to Corey Schneider and wish that you know, the Jets could have signed Schneider instead of Pavlik, because
obviously,
you know, Andrei Pavlik, there obviously is a precedent, and aside from Andrew Ladd, he's the only guy that the Jets have signed long term. You know, and on the topic of Corey Schneider versus Andrei Pavlik, I think Corey Schneider is a better goalie, but Andrei Pavlik, I think, had a good season. And you know, I tweeted about this right after Andrei Pavlik signed the deal, and I'd have to agree with Richie, Drew. I think, you know, the amount of years surprised me a little bit, and the salary cap hit might be a little high, but I mean, it is an escalating salary in the sense that it goes up 0.25 or 0.5, I believe, each year, starting off at 2.75 or 3, I believe, and going up to 4.75.
I believe that's exactly how it works. Yeah.
So, you know, as far as him as a goaltender, he's 24 years old, and you know, I still think that he is a number one goaltender in the NHL. Now, I don't think that he's in the bottom five in the NHL as far as starting goaltenders go. I don't think you can look at his stats, because the Jets, this was their first year. There was injuries on defense. You know, the Jets have a lot of room to grow, so you can't just look at his save percentages and his goals against. Now, he did have some bad games. Pavlik had some bad games, and he is shaky, and he definitely needs to improve his consistency. There's no doubt about it. But they had to show Pavlik the commitment, and I think he wants to be here.
I mean, I think Alan Walsh did a good job of negotiating here, and I don't like Alan Walsh, and Alan Walsh is, as an ego, the size of the studio.
That's Andre Pavlik's agent, on Alan Walsh.
But I do think that he did a good job here in this negotiation. He used the Jets, he put the Jets kind of against themselves. You know, uses a KHL leverage, and he's not going to KHL for 1 year. He's got, I mean, if he goes for 1 year, $5 million, he's leaving $13, $14 million on the table.
Richie, you know that a guy like Corey Schneider, who it's been evident since really last year that he was the heir apparent, and it probably should have happened earlier. But when you know that a guy like Corey Schneider isn't available, or someone similar to him, I mean, you want to lock up Andrei Pavlik. I think that you know, the Jets, in the sense that the goalie market isn't, you know, excellent. The free agent goalie market isn't excellent. You're talking about guys like Scott Clemenson or you know, Jonas Gustafsson, goalies of that ilk.
Yeah, also, the Gustafsson acquisition, I mean, I don't think that had anything to do with the signing. I mean, acquiring Jonas Gustafsson isn't leverage. You're not going to threaten to use Jonas Gustafsson as your starter next year. So I think that was blown out of proportion as well. I think they're looking at him probably as a backup who knows what happens now. It doesn't cost them much if they sign him. But Gustafsson or Mason is the decision they have to make. Why not go with Gustafsson? I mean, I like Chris Mason, don't get me wrong, but it does give you some upside possibility. You have to, you know, and then the one question people have or the concern they have is, oh, you know, young guy. Well, you just gave Pavlik 5 years, so you better be confident enough that he can handle a veteran back there or not.
I don't think he needs to, there's the issue anymore about, you know, having to get his feet under him in the NHL. He's been around this league enough that he knows how to be a professional hockey goaltender.
Another thing about Pavlik people may not realize, he's had some issues with his conditioning. And, you know, they talk about wearing down the end of the season. How much of that is playing a lot? Because he didn't play 70 Marty Brodeur games. And how much of that is the fact he's not in great shape?
Well, and that's something that I'm sure the Jets brought up. And that's
been an issue in the past. Chris Mason talked about it a couple of, I think it was 2 years ago in Atlanta. He mentioned it in passing. If you read the articles in Atlanta, we've talked to Chris Vivlamore back in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution about that. So that's another issue in terms of, you know, that goes both ways. You show confidence in him, maybe he gets in shape, or you give him a 5-year deal and he's feeling comfortable.
Well, it can go either way, and that's always a risk with any young player, or with any athlete at all. You never know what's going to happen.
Well,
What's going to happen?
But it's more of a risk with the guy who's already shown to not be in the best shape.
If he's got a history of not being in peak physical condition, then it is something. But look, I mean, goaltenders and being in shape. I mean, Marty Brodeur has never been confused for a workout freak.
Sure. Well, I mean, yeah, he's not ripped by any means, but the truth is, Drew, the guy can play 70 games without taking a deep breath.
You're right, and some people are wired that way, in order where they play better when they play longer, and some players need that extra break. Look, I think undoubtedly by the end of the year last year, And whether it's a factor of facing a ton of pucks throughout the course, you know, and
14th most shots against in the NHL, I believe that's the number, right? I'll pull it up to make sure. 14th most shots in the NHL. So there's a lot as a team. So there's a lot of goalies who face more shots than Andrei Pavlik did. Now you could talk about the quality of shots and argue whether or not that exists to you know, even to a small level.
Perception, whether or not it's the reality, but the perception, I think, for most people is that Andrei Pavlik faced a lot of faced a lot of quality scoring opportunities last year. Now, how do you quantify that, and how does that play out?
I mean, I think to an extent, Drew, the Jets, the way they played defense, gave up some good scoring chances. But I think also if you watch a lot of other teams, I bet you they did as well. The Jets probably a little more, but I think other teams probably as well.
And I would make the argument, and don't get me wrong, if you've listened to the show, I've been a huge Corey Schneider fan since we've been doing the show. He was excellent on Manitoba, and in 2000, I believe it was 2009, when the Moose went to the Calder Cup Finals, Corey Schneider was their best player. It wasn't even close. But Andrei Pavlik, I believe you could make the argument that he faces more shots. Okay, that's more difficult, so you got to give him a little leeway. You can make the argument that Corey Schneider on Vancouver, is a puck possession team, an excellent team, a good defensive team. He faces a lower quality of shots so that his save percentage is higher. His save percentage, I believe, was in the 930 range. But, I mean, when you're getting into stats like that, I don't think you want to, you know, go too hardcore on that. It's not apples and oranges. You can't say this guy's better because his save percentage is 930 versus a guy that has a 910 save percentage. I think the most important thing, Drew, is, and you know, this is, you know, financial terms aside, Andrei Pavlik is an excellent young goaltender. He's still, I believe, going to get better. And I think it's important to identify him as your number one goaltender. You don't want to have a situation like you do in Vancouver with Luongo and Schneider. The Vancouver Canucks have put themselves in a terrible position. Now Luongo's got 10 years left on his contract, and Schneider's a better goaltender.
And you look at this Pavlik contract, I don't think this is going to be one of those albatrosses that's going to affect the team. I don't see that we're going to be sitting here 2 or 3 years from now and lamenting this contract hovering over the team like the sword of Damocles.
The Jets were the Jets were 15th in the NHL in shots against, so not as bad as people think. But on that point, Drew, in terms of an albatross, quote unquote, I mean, yes and no. I mean, it's not an $8 million deal, and it's not for 10 years. But if the Jets aren't going to spend much more over the salary cap floor, then every dollar spent on a guy who's not productive is a dollar that can spend on somebody else.
Well, if they're not going to spend more than the salary cap floor, I think there's another problem to be had.
Whatever the floor is,
yeah.
I mean, we don't know how it's going
to
be.
The Jets have to spend. I mean, we're talking free agency. It starts tomorrow. Yeah. The Jets have to spend $11 million in order to get to the salary cap floor. Now, a portion
40% of that will be Kane.
Well, a decent chunk of that will be Evander Kane.
Yep.
And then the question is, where do they spend the rest of that money? Are they spending it on a bunch of third and fourth line guys, or are they trying to go out and really bolster something to their top six?
They're going to have no issue spending that money. It's easy to spend that money. You're going to pay Kane what you're going to pay Kane. However, that'll depend on term, obviously. And then you're going to have to fill out the rest of your roster with guys you need to bring back, and then you pay another guy $1 or $2 million more, and there you go.
Well, that's the problem. I don't think people. Everybody expects that they're going to fill it out with third and fourth line guys, which means we're going to have the same team we had last year, which isn't good enough, especially in an improved Southeast Division everything else.
Based on what's happened so far, Drew, exactly right. Based on what's happened so far, you have to expect Tampa to be better. Carolina getting Stahl. You have Florida. Who knows if they'll be better or not. But Washington with a new coach now and bringing in an offensive guy like Ribeiro, whether you like that long term or not. The Jets, as it stands, haven't changed a thing. And I would be surprised if people expected that much better, you know, that much in terms of better results.
Well, we'll find out. September will be here soon enough. Let's go to break. On our Twitter page, at Illegal Curve, there's the article about Andrei Pavlik's conditioning issues from April 2011 Atlanta Journal-Constitution. So check us out on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. When we come back, the Washington Capitals play-by-play man Joe Beninati is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the Washington Capitals play-by-play man on Comcast Sportsnet, Joe Beninati. Joe, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Drew, Richard, Ezra, my pleasure. Should be a fun weekend here.
Absolutely. How are things down in Florida today?
You know, Florida is a whole lot better than where I'm coming from. From what I understand, last night in the Washington, D.C. area, my home was, they were hit with a pretty good storm. My house is still without power, and here I am sitting in sunny Florida, basking in the glow and going, I'm sure I have a few chores to tend to when I get back tomorrow.
I'm sure the family likes to hear that you're relaxed in Florida while they're without power, but we won't tell them. How about that?
It continues to happen time after time. I leave on business and whammo.
Joe, let's start with the Washington Capitals, Alex Semin. He's an unrestricted free agent as of 12 noon Eastern time tomorrow. Is it a foregone conclusion that Alex is on his way out of the Washington Capitals organization?
Let's say 90-10. How about that? I guess it's time. And some people will sit there and say it's been time for a while, guys. You know, Alex Semin's been part of that organization for at least 9 seasons. Grew up in that organization, and we really don't know him very well. And I'm sure that says a lot about us, and that we weren't able to pry enough, but also it says a lot about Alex. He wanted to be his own person. He never really warmed up to the local media in the D.C. area, never really embraced the language, but my goodness, his talents are so incredible that year after year he was continually re-signed and at a handsome price. I'm not saying he's totally gone. I don't think it's completely a closed-door situation, but I'd be surprised if he bounces back onto a Caps roster by the end of the day tomorrow.
Joe, from Bruce Boudreaux to Dale Hunter, why did George McPhee select Adam Oates to be the next coach of the Capitals?
Really interesting that it's, I want to say, 5 in a row now, guys. 5 coaches that George McPhee has hired in a row who did not have any prior NHL head coaching experience. And George McPhee thinks the world of Adam Oates, always did as a player, and fully expects that to translate now that he's in the head coaching capacity. George referred to it as upside. He hired the man he believes who has the greatest upside in the coaching concern. And I think if we remember Adam Oates the player, the guy who was feeding Brett Hull or feeding Cam Neely or putting pucks on a platter on the power play for Peter Bondra, we always knew that he was an incredible offensive mind. Mm-hmm. But guys, really, he's one of the smartest hockey players I've ever met and worked with. I think of Adam Oates, I think of Patrick Waugh, and I think of Wayne Gretzky with just an elite hockey sense. And I know that George McPhee is hoping that that can translate and that Adam will relate well to the guys inside that dressing room.
Joe, earlier this week, the Calgary Flames and the Washington Capitals made a trade involving Dennis Wiedemann. How surprised were you when you saw the amount of years in the contract that Dennis Wiedemann got with Calgary?
Guys, I had been hearing those rumblings for a while, and I think the Caps were definitely hearing them towards the tail end of the regular season, going to the playoffs. Dennis blossoms into an all-star talent with the Caps. He was given some primary responsibilities, especially on offense. And he took to them very well. And we were hearing, geez, you know, he's going to strike it rich in the free agent market. It's going to turn out that the timing is just perfect for Dennis. And folks were right. There was a team that's out there, or probably more than one, that were willing to give Dennis long-term and big, big dollars. So I know that the Capitals were – I didn't think that the Capitals were going to approach those kinds of numbers for Dennis, so I truly felt that he would be going elsewhere. Washington has a couple of young defenders that they're very high on, that they think that they can put into the fold in this coming season. And also, if they can spend their dollars elsewhere on the front lines, I think that's going to be their interest tomorrow.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Joe Beninati. Joe is the Washington Capitals play-by-play man on Comcast Sportsnet. Now, Joe, during the NHL entry draft, or the NHL draft now, they dropped entry, George McPhee acquired Mike Ribeiro from the Dallas Stars in exchange for Cody Eakin and a second-round pick. What is it about Mike Ribeiro's game that George McPhee found so attractive for the Washington Capitals lineup?
I know early in his career he had that reputation for sort of being a perimeter player, a player who liked to play on the outside, not necessarily get his nose dirty. But the one thing you know about Ribeiro, silky soft passes, very good playmaker. I think he can be a bonus to Washington's power play. The Caps will definitely look to improve upon that. If you think back 2 or 3 seasons ago, their power play was hovering 1 and 2 in the NHL. Last year, it did not have nearly the same success. Adam Oates did inject some life into the New Jersey power play, at least during the regular season. Mm-hmm. Ribeiro's going to help in that regard. I know shootouts don't count in the playoffs, but Ribeiro is an outstanding shootout contributor, so that'll help to it some potentially some more additional wins during the regular season. And for years now, the Caps have been saying, gosh, we need somebody to fill in that, quote, number two role behind Nick Backstrom. And it just seems like the best teams year after year, the ones that finally bring home the Stanley Cup, are tremendously deep down the middle, and the Capitals are trying to improve in that regard, and they believe they have with Mike Ribeiro.
Joe, what the cost in terms of Cody Eakin in the second-round pick, Cody Eakin being a Winnipegger, of course, guy we've seen play a little bit in the WHL and some time with the Capitals. Seems like he has some upside, maybe, you know, maybe even top six, kind of second-line upside. How reticent was George McPhee to include him in the deal?
You know, I think he was pleased with it, and he feels like you know, Cody is going to be a fine player in the NHL. We saw Cody very, very briefly. You have to give to get. I know Ribeiro has 1 year left, and I want to say maybe $5 million on his ticket. But you to bring in a player of that caliber, you have to give something. And Cody is a prospect. I think Cody skates very well. I think he demonstrated a really lively shot when he had the opportunities to play on the higher lines. And with this Washington team, he was never really afforded that chance to play in the top six the way that this team is presently constructed. And maybe we didn't see the best of Cody Eakin on a third and fourth line unit. I thought that they were very pleased with the way he performed in Hershey. And again, obviously Dallas is getting a fine young player and a good young man from Winnipeg.
Joe, Drew mentioned the NHL draft, and the Washington Capitals drafted a couple of picks after the Jets at number 11. The Jets had the ninth pick, and you know, some fans were pretty excited when they saw that Philippe Forsberg was going to fall to number 9. Were the Washington Capitals kind of surprised that Philippe Forsberg was available at 11 and happy that they were able to select him? And what did you hear about why he fell? Because some people thought he might go, you know, second or third overall.
Well, they were pleased, and to say the least, that Forsberg was there with their first of the two picks in that opening round. George McPhee was determined to get is it Thomas Wilson, the 16, for sure, because he wanted to beef up the forward ranks, and from what I understand, the young man is already a beast and projects to be that. George was sitting there thinking that he was going to be grabbing one of those defenders, all those defensemen that went in a row. I want to say it was seven straight picks that were D, and it sure seemed like at the Caps table, they were more than ready to prepare to pick a defenseman, and Forsberg kept slipping and sliding and flipping and sliding. And on their books, if you believe them, they had Forsberg a lot higher rated than where they had to select him. So there was really no choice. It made it a pretty easy decision, even though the whole table was gearing up to figure out which defender they wanted. With Forsberg there was no recourse. They took it, and they're happy about it. And here's another player who a few years down the road can contribute to what is expected to be a very lively offensive bunch, especially if the Caps can get another former first-round pick, Evgeny Kuznetsov, into the fold from Russia. But that's a story for another day.
Joe, we'll let you go on this one last question. With free agency opening tomorrow morning, the Caps have about $20 million in cap space that is available to them. If fans were to look at one area on the Caps team, where should fans look for the Caps trying to upgrade in the free agency market?
Oh, guys, I'll give you two. I really think, Drew, Richard, and Ezra, I really think that they're going to be interested in adding a forward. If indeed Semmond is not going to return, and I'm going to operate under that impression that Alex Semmond's not going to be back, they do need another forward. And now, will they get into the Parise discussion? I sure hope so as a Caps fan, but I don't know that that's going to turn out to be fruitful. I fully expect them to bid high-end forward and bid on high-end defense. They've got some money to spend with, and they've shown no hesitancy to approach the salary cap ceiling in the past. And now, if you are taking Alex Semmond off the books, if you've removed Dennis Wiedemann, which you have, I want to say his cap hit was 3.9. Mike Knubel, also Tomas Vokoun, also Jeff Halpern. Yeah, you've added some dollars with Mike Ribeiro, obviously. There's money to spend there. I would expect high line winger and possibly top four defender.
We'll look forward to that starting at 11 a.m. Winnipeg time tomorrow. Joe Beninati, Washington Capitals play-by-play man on Comcast Sportsnet. Thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Guys, my pleasure. Anytime.
We'll see you back in Winnipeg later on this year.
You got it.
Take care, Joe. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Joe.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to Joe Beninati, Washington Capitals play-by-play man.
One of the greatest voices in hockey. Yeah, I love listening to him call Ovechkin goals. The Great Eight!
Well, isn't this convenient? Aaron Portsline, who's going to be joining us in about 1 hour's time from now, just tweeted, strong reason to believe that the Rick Nash trade talk on the eve of NHL free agency is beginning to warm up considerably. Well, so there's some talk. Maybe Rick goes. People had sort of been speculating Rick Nash might go after the Parise and everything else shakes out. Maybe it's going to be the other way around. Maybe Rick Nash goes before free agency officially opens tomorrow morning. Speaking of free agency, join us live tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. down at the Winnipeg Free Press News Cafe. We're broadcasting live from 9 a.m. until 12:30. The NHL Free Agency Frenzy Special here on TSN 1290. Join us. You can have breakfast with us. Sit around and see how this radio program gets made. And join. And it's going to be a really fun morning. Interactive. Everything else. Come down to the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe tomorrow morning. We're looking forward to that.
And Drew, there will be room. There have been rumors rampant on the internet that there won't be room in there because of the amount of Ezra fans, the acolytes, if you will, that are going to come down. But there will be room for everybody.
Oh,
the Free Press, there's a lot of square footage there, the Free Press Cafe. So there is going to be room. Come on down. There might be a bit of a lineup, but Remus is going to bounce the door. He's going to be our bouncer, so just tell him that you know me. He'll let you in, but there should be enough room. A lot of people coming down just to see me, actually.
On the list. Is there a list for tomorrow?
Sorry, I lied. Mainly there to see Richie.
Yeah, there you go.
Is there a list?
I don't think there's a list. I think that you're free to come. If you can make it in there, good luck. 9 a.m. tomorrow down at the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is sponsored by the Cheer Bar and Grill, located in the heart of Osborne Village at Stradbrook and Osborne. Catch all of the home team's games on their numerous HD big screens. Canada Day. It's the Canada Day weekend. The Osborne Village is shut down. The Cheer Bar and Grill has got to be your home for everything Canada Day related. Great patio, great times. That's the Cheer Bar and Grill, located in the heart of Osborne Village at Stradbrook and Osborne.
I'm pretty sure what they do at the Cheer on Canada Day, which is tomorrow, it's coming up really close.
Thanks, Ez.
What they do is they turn the entire parking lot into a beer garden.
Well, that works for me.
True.
Yeah.
That works for me. I think that works for you. In fact, you've actually already started drinking.
Yep.
Yeah, that was very nice of you. Anyways, looking for that Cheer Bar and Grill in the heart of Osborne Village. Big day everywhere. Hockey World, Canada Day World, everything is going to be big and exciting tomorrow. Nice weather as well. Let's start with the Sidney Crosby contract extension as we go around talk about some of the signings that happened earlier this week in the NHL. Sidney Crosby, 12 years, $104.4 million contract. For a guy with the concussion history that Sidney Crosby has, is this a move you make if you're the Pittsburgh Penguins?
You know, it's really interesting both ways, Drew, and we were talking about it before the show, you know, and people have been talking about it prior to us getting on air. It's, you know, the $8.7 million cap hit, which is key.
So that's right. It's an $8.7 million cap hit, which is the same cap hit he currently has.
And the same number that he wears on his back.
That's right. Well, year he was born, all that stuff. But, I mean, so $8.7 million a year. First of all, there's the angle of the Donald Fehr angle, meaning why would any GM, although there are some dumb GMs, let me tell you.
We've seen it this week in spades.
Why would any GM give anybody over $8.7 million a year? Because Crosby's the best player. Everybody knows it. It's not a question.
You're talking about any other player. Why would GM agree to giving $8.7 million?
Jay Feaster just gave Dennis Wyman $3.2 million less per year than Sidney Crosby. But we won't get into that right now. The Crosby issue, Drew, you keep the cap hit low. So that's great. That might make it all worth it for you. On the other hand, you take on a long-term commitment for a guy who's had concussion problems. We don't even know enough about concussions right now. We'll probably learn more about them in the future, and it almost assuredly can't be insured. And you know, they talk about, well, there's certain premiums you can pay. Well, how much is the premium you're paying to insure the contract, and how much is that adding on to the amount of money? Now, I know they're talking about millionaires and billionaires here or owning this team, but I personally hate the long-term deal. If you're Sidney Crosby, you're getting $104 million guaranteed. You have to like it. Now, what would Donald Fehr? So I don't mind that. From Sidney Crosby, you're going to take the $1 million guaranteed.
$100 million
guaranteed. Excuse me. If you're Donald Fehr, you're thinking to yourself, why don't you sign $100 million guaranteed for 7 years? Because that's what you would have got in the open market next year.
Donald Fehr is upset because Sidney Crosby has given the Penguins the exact same cap hit.
That's right.
He has not increased his value in terms of in terms of the cap hit.
And where are revenues? The salary cap has went from 39 to 70 since 2005? 7 years.
Revenues
basically
have gone
doubled.
The NHL's revenues have gone up significantly, but Sidney Crosby is costing the Pittsburgh Penguins the same amount of money this year and for the next 12 years as he did in the last.
You're talking about Sidney
years.
Crosby. You talked about Pavlik before in terms of motivation. As he is. Sidney Crosby's best shape, motivated. I mean, that's the one guy. I hate long term deals. You look at Ovechkin, how he's changed over the course of his long term deal.
13-year deal.
Yeah. And he's already become a less productive player. But you look at Crosby and you think, if there's one guy who would be intrinsically motivated enough to keep to be worth it, he's the guy. But
you have guys are wired like Sidney Crosby.
Right. But you have the issue of insurance. I mean, the guy hasn't played much in the past two seasons. There's an insurance issue there. And, I mean, I guess in theory, if Sidney Crosby got hurt, they keep him on the long-term injury reserve pending the new CBA rules, and they would never have him retire. And
if Sidney Crosby's not hurt the last 18
actually,
months.
Actually, it's signed before 35, so he wouldn't matter for
the cap. If Sidney Crosby's not hurt the last 18 months, the majority of the last 18 months, how much can he sign for?
Whatever he wants. The $14 million is the max under the cap right now.
Could he sign for $14
million? For sure. If you put him on the open market next year, anybody would sign him for $14 million. He's worth it, marketing-wise, production-wise, first and foremost. But marketing-wise, I mean, he's the best player on your team. He makes everybody around him better. He makes your team instantly more profitable. There's nothing. It's like Michael Jordan when they didn't really have the cap in the NBA and the Bulls were paying him $30 million 15 years ago or 10 years ago because he was bringing in that much money they could afford to pay him. Now, we're in a cap system, so it's a little bit different. But I think overall there's risk on both sides. I just, as a little bit of an aside, I hate the long-term deal. And I realize the NHL owners are going to have to put a new rule in place for term of contracts, and I realize they're essentially placing that upon themselves because they signed the contracts. But as a fan, long-term deals for guys aside from Sidney Crosby who aren't that motivated hurt the game. You know, why is Jonathan Quick signing a 10-year deal? Why is Crosby signing an over 10-year deal?
Well, let's talk about Jonathan Quick's deal. 10 years, $58 million.
And they're doing it to keep the cap hit low, and they're doing it because they know almost assuredly that in the new CBA as in September, you're not going to be able to sign a contract over 5 years.
Guys, I just want to stick. I know, Drew, we want to get to the Jonathan Quick contract because that came out the same day, and I know that's important. But I just want to say a few things on the Sidney Crosby deal because it is it's a trend-setting deal. And I think Richie's right. Over the last couple of years, I've started to develop the same opinion about long-term deals. When you've got Jeff Carter and Mike Richards signing long-term deals with the Philadelphia Flyers, then deciding that they don't want him, and then you've got Roberto Luongo signing a 12-year deal, them deciding that they don't want him. Think of the problems that's causing and has caused with their goaltending issues. But with Sidney Crosby, I know that he has the concussion issues, and those are real, and those are serious. And Drew, you mentioned, well, what if he didn't, you know, suffer that hit from Jay Beagle, and what if he hasn't missed all these games and had the concussion problems? Obviously, he could ask for whatever he wants. Sidney Crosby is unquestionably, whether or not he has concussions, no concussions, he's the best talent in the league, and he's already won, you know, the Stanley Cup, the Olympic gold. He's, in my opinion, the best forward to come around since Gretzky, and I think that he still
Lemieux is better,
or Lemieux, but you know.
Your point is well taken.
And I think that Richie, he has the ability to ask for whatever he wants.
Yeah.
And I think that from the Pittsburgh Penguins organizational standpoint, I think it's a little bit questionable. But the way I look at it, you know, Crosby and Pat Brisson asked for the long term deal. He wants to know that he can be there for the rest of his career. This is going to take him to what, 36 or 37 years old. He might have to sign one or two more contracts in his life, but those will be short term.
It is odd in terms of the 8.7 in 5-6 years. If he's still playing, he's playing at his top level, and the league's making more money than ever. There's going to be lots of players making more money than him. Because some of these GMs are going to pay over him, even though they shouldn't, because they should keep that structure in place. And then, you know, if you're the best player in the league, you have 6 more years left in your deal. You can't renegotiate, and you have a bunch of players who are probably not as good as you making more money. I mean, the ego is an interesting issue there.
And the argument that Crosby could make more is bang on. I mean, Ilya Kovalchuk's making 10, And Sidney Crosby, Ilya Kovalchuk, in my opinion, is a top five forward. Crosby's the best forward. He could ask for and get $12 million on a shorter term. He could get something like a 7-year, $84 million deal, whatever,
yeah.
Something like that. And from that standpoint, I can understand why Donald Fehr is a little bit upset. And, you know, back to the long-term contract issue, Richie, I think that both the NHLPA and the owners, you know, the NHL, more specifically the agents that are negotiating these deals and the general managers and obviously the owners that are signing the checks, I think that you know, going into these CBA negotiations, they're not helping themselves at all. I mean, Dennis Wiedemann, good power play defenseman, and he's put up nice numbers with the Bruins and the Capitals. But when you have a guy like that who's essentially a number four defenseman getting a 5-year deal, and a 5-year deal, a 5-year deal is a long term deal.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long term deal.
Yeah.
And when you have him signing a long term deal for that amount of money, I mean, and some of the other deals that are going on, I mean, that's not good for either side. It's not good for the players or the owners.
I'm looking forward to when, you know, 6 weeks from now, when the NHL owners plead poverty.
That's right. That's right.
You know, they plead poverty. Yep. And then, you know, if I'm Donald Fehr, I usually fall to the side of the players in CBA negotiations.
I'm with the players here, too.
You know, if I'm Donald Fehr, what am I supposed to say? No, don't go sign a ridiculous contract because we're going to be...
Don't sign a 12-year deal?
That's right.
Don't sign 15-year deals?
Don't guarantee yourself, you know, your life security? They'd be... The owners are the ones who hoist this upon themselves by being stupid.
We're talking about hockey here. NBA has their own cap on contracts in term, right? And with respect to term. Baseball doesn't.
What's that cap?
I think it's 5 years, right? 5 or 6
five?
Years now.
I think it was six, now it's
5.
I'll have to double check, but if I recall correctly, it's you can re-sign your own player for a longer term than the guy can get on the free agency market.
We're checking. I don't know. I haven't followed NBA as closely now. They have a new CBA in place, but NFL, they're not guaranteed anyways, so it's relevant.
Right.
And then you have baseball. And in baseball, you see like the A-Rod deal or the Albert Pujols deal or Joey Votto. But for the most part, you know, most guys aren't signing 10, 12-year deals. Now, there are some 7-year deals that buy out arbitration, but they have your rights for a fair amount of time in baseball.
I also think in baseball.
I think the same amount of time as hockey, 7 years, I believe. But the point is, Drew, it's baseball. There's no wear and tear on the body
baseball. That's exactly
so it's easy to project overall, and the numbers, it's so much easier to project the numbers in baseball, that you have an idea of what you're going to get from the player for the duration of the contract. Like they can scale Albert Pujols' contract and know that they're paying him a lot in the 40th when he's 39 or 40, but that his production and when he's 33 is going to outweigh it's going to outweigh the money when he's 40, all that stuff. Hockey is so much harder to predict. You don't have concussions. I mean, you have concussions in baseball with Morneau and guys who... You know, what is it? Franklin Gutierrez who gets hit in the head. But they're rare.
Those are rare, and those are
it's not a contact sport.
Right.
So it's easier to project what's going to happen moving forward in terms of injuries.
That's right.
Here, you don't have that.
Like, look at Crosby gets hit next week.
Let me put you this way. Look at pitchers in baseball. How many pitchers sign 10-year deals?
Very few.
Do we know any who signed 10-year deals?
Probably the last one was, what's his name, Kevin Brown?
Maybe. What did Matt Cain sign recently? Remus will know all that. But the point is, you know why they don't sign pitchers for long-term deals?
Because their arms blow out.
Exactly. And the injury risk is similar. Hockey, you have all these risks of injury. So the GMs are smart enough in baseball without any constraints to know, we can't sign a guy to that long of a deal. Who knows what's going to happen? Yet here, you still get the same mistakes over and over again.
Well, you know, when that Dennis Wiedemann contract came out earlier this week.
And at least Stempniak wasn't much better.
Well, at least Stempniak wasn't much better, you're right. But the Dennis Wiedemann one, we'll talk about that when we get to the Calgary Flames. But when you can get an entire really group of media laughing when they see a contract because of how bad it is.
Well, the best part is that they've been complaining about getting Jay Boumeister off the books for years now, really.
Yeah.
And they just brought a guy in and paid him basically the same amount of money to be a smooth-skating, kind of puck-moving defenseman, maybe a little bit more offensively adept, but probably not as good defensively. And basically brought in the contract you're trying to get rid of.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. It really just doesn't make any sense. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to start going division by division, team by team, with our free agency preview. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Coming up in about 10-12 minutes time, Kevin Allen from USA Today is going to join us. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Southeast Division.
Division by division, team by team, we start with the Winnipeg Jets and the Southeast Division. You know, the Jets have a lot of cap room and they have a lot of holes to fill. And yet nobody really thinks they're going to be too active starting tomorrow. We think it's going to be fringe players, not difference makers. You know, why should a Jets fan have hope for this season coming up?
You know what? I want to step in here because I know that this is the second season, or we're heading into the second season. And I get it from a fan perspective. I get why, you know, fans would want Chevy and Zinger to go out and spend $6 or $7 million on a Zach Parise or something like that, even though Parise might get more than that. But there is a reason for hope, and I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it starts with Evander Kane, and that's the most important signing after Andrei Pavlik. And you know, I know that you know people are probably listening and saying, you know, what's Ezra talking about, which is probably most of the time. But you know, the Jets are building from within. And they've said that from day one, and nothing's going to change. And you know, sure, the signings, whether it's a Jordan Tutu or somebody like that, or a Dustin Penner, both guys from Manitoba. I mean,
both guys from Manitoba. I don't get that logic, for the record. I don't fully understand that logic, why the Jets have to be interested in every guy who's from Manitoba.
Well,
Has anybody seen Dustin Penner play hockey with the exception of the last 3 months?
He's got two Stanley Cups.
Great.
He played well in Edmonton before that, Drew, but... You know, in L.A., obviously, yeah, he played poorly. The question is a guy like Dustin Penner, does he add to the size element to this team?
Yes.
For sure. Not that he plays that big, but he does, you know, he uses the size on the boards and
he
such.
He eats big.
He eats big. But, you know, does he improve your top six? Sure. Would he be an improvement over what they have? Yeah, I guess. The problem is he plays left wing, and the team's strongest position is left wing. So are you going to throw him to right wing?
That's true.
And that's the question. Are you going to put him on the
Kane
third?
Kane and Ladd have that locked up.
Right, so you're going to play him on the third line, which you could, and it'd be an improvement for sure. But how much are you paying him to play him on the third line? And let's not get crazy here about in terms of his motivation. And if people don't like Nick Antropov, it's a very similar thing. You're going to throw out the Russian card, Dustin, but it's not the Russian card. Dustin, in fact, he's not that motivated.
He's not that motivated. He's motivated every time his contract comes up. That's when he's the most motivated. You know, I want to hold off on the Jets. We're going to spend 30 minutes with the Jets tomorrow. Ed Tater, the Winnipeg Free Press, is going to join us at the cafe.
We wrote a good article this morning in the Free Press about the prospective players.
So we're going to talk to him. We'll spend a lot of time on the Jets tomorrow morning before the free agency window opens. Let's go start with the Carolina Hurricanes. I'll do it alphabetically in the Southeast Division.
Sure.
Carolina Hurricanes, they have $22 million in cap room. Everybody in the NHL has ample amounts of cap room, with the exception of the Boston Bruins right now. The cap is up to $70.5 million. You know, the Carolina Hurricanes, do you expect, you know, they went out and they got Jordan Staal. They're going to re-sign him, logically. Do you expect them to be active players tomorrow?
Yeah, apparently they have money to spend. I mean, obviously some of that's going to Staal, but they do have money to spend. And they have room to improve in all areas. I mean, they have some good young defensemen, Drew. But they also have some guys coming off the cap, and that's Brian Allen, that's Jaroslav Spachek, and we'll see what happens there. They have a strong goaltender, so... They're looking to probably improve a veteran, you know, a veteran presence on the defense and improve their talent level up front.
They also need a backup goaltender, it's worth noting. Now, Brian Boucher is out for 4 to 6 months.
Again, when you have Cam Ward back there, I mean, your backup goaltender issue, sure, you're going to look into it, but it's not the first priority. The first priority is improving your offensive skill level. I mean, you have Eric Staal, Jordan Staal, and Jeff Skinner. That's your first tier. Your second tier is the guys like Ruutu and Jussi Jokinen. But you want to add another player there. You want to add another top six forward.
I think, and, you know...
probably another third liner, too.
Last year, I think, we talked about this last week. I think that Jordan Staal move is very good for the Carolina Hurricanes for obvious reasons. I was really high on the Hurricanes last year, and I was a little bit surprised. Obviously, a guy like Jeff Skinner took a step back, and remember Eric Staal, you know, struggled in the early part of the season because of what happened with that hit on his brother. But, you know, the Carolina Hurricanes could definitely use, that's exactly what they need, is top six forward and a veteran guy.
Yeah, on the back end.
A guy, I'm not saying that they're going to sign him, but a guy like a Shane Doan or something like that. And they could all obviously use, another defenseman or two. The defense is in Carolina is young.
Another third liner, too, even. Like a top six or a third liner and a veteran defenseman, if not two.
Yep.
Like you need three, four players there.
Carolina Hurricanes are a team, I think, that would be, if you had to circle a team in the NHL, they're a prime bounce-back team that could be
absolutely
very easily move from being outside of the playoffs into the playoffs for next year.
Again, and if you're a Jets fan, you're playing them six times a year. It's not good the way they've improved with that Jordan Staal deal.
That's right. And never mind what they do at free agency, which, like you said, we hear rumors and rumblings that they're going to be active. the
They have
players.
Money to spend, and they have a really good puck moving back in. When you have Yoni Pickin and Jamie McBain and Justin Falk on the back end, you have puck movers. You have guys who can skate and move the puck well. And a stay-at-home guy like Gleason. You want to add in a veteran presence who can play a defensive style. But you have depth now. You have Eric Staal and Jordan Staal who can play the middle. You have Tuomas Ruutu and Jussi Jokinen who can play the middle. But all those guys can also play the wing. Every one of them can play the wing as well. So you have flexibility in your roster. You probably want to add a second-line right winger, another third-liner. And there's a few needs there, but they have some star power. And when you can build from a great goalie, really good young puck-moving defense, and some two really good two-way players in Staal, and Jeff Skinner, one of the probably arguably the top 10 in terms of hands in the NHL, and a nice coach, a good coach in Kirk Muller. It's a nice base with which to work from.
Exactly. Moving to Florida Panthers, they made a lot of moves last year just to get up to the salary floor. Yep. They have $29 million in cap space, so they're also going to need to.
And out of that 29, they're obviously going to have to get a little bit up to the floor. And
yeah,
we've been
to spend some money to get to the floor like they did last year.
Yeah, and we've been reading about Jason Garrison. And he might command upwards of $5 million, which, again, is a little bit ridiculous.
Yeah,
because
That'd be funny.
He's only had one proven year, and he's a bit of a one-dimensional player, as Dennis Wiedemann is, unfortunately. But, you know, the Florida Panthers are another team. They could use a veteran. That's a young team. You've got guys like Kulikov and Keaton Ellerbe and younger defensemen, and then Jacob Markstrom. It's not clear what they're going to do. The Florida Panthers right now are the front runner to get Luongo, and you have to think
why
that with
why would
all,
they want
to
do that though? I don't get that. I don't know why they'd want to do that.
With the issue with that is that Jacob Markstrom is one of the best young goaltending talents, and they've put time into him. They've put a lot of time into Jacob Markstrom, and they've basically set it up. Clemenson is a UFA. So they also it's a perfect opportunity for Jacob Markstrom to step in as the number one goalie.
Yeah,
over Theodore.
You're in a 1.5 deal
I don't
next
see,
year.
If you're the Florida Panthers, I don't see why you would trade any sort of valuable asset whatsoever for Roberto Luongo.
And another thing, Drew, is you look at this Florida team, and you know they don't have much on the cap past 2014-15. That's kind of where they signed all those guys to when they expect their young players to be due for raises. But you're dealing with a veteran squad that knows their responsibilities. They're not great. They overachieved last year. But you're talking about a team that has a deep system. You just got to let it ride. Florida might be okay now, but in a couple of years, it's going to be really good.
A guy like Shane Doan could fit in there nicely. Same thing.
Shane Doan could fit in on every NHL
team.
But
Shane Doan's
not going to go from Phoenix to the
Phoenix
South to Florida. The
Florida
Panthers. Yeah. He's not. I mean, you mentioned the Panthers. The Panthers have nine guys under that are currently on their NHL roster who are under contract in 2013-2014. So they have a ton of flexibility.
They do, and that's what they want. That's what they can afford to bring
Brian
Campbell up.
Which is smart. I mean, you look at them right now, coming into the next season, they have four defensemen under contract.
Yeah.
That's it. They have Brian Campbell, who had a nice bounce back year last year.
But you look at their prospects, you know, Justin Huberdeau and Markstrom, as you mentioned, and Quentin Howden. He's a Winnipegger.
Yeah. Yep.
He's really good. McFarland, amongst others. There's a lot of good players in the system here. If you're Florida, so it's a matter of patience. If I'm Florida, I stray away from long-term deal like Luongo and just fill in. You don't do much
depth players. Yeah. I mean, they'll do what they did last year, which is depth players. I mean, they might try and get Christopher Stieg's an RFA, so they'll probably get him back under contract.
He's going to get a little raise.
So is Woltek Wolski. They're both RFAs.
I don't know about Wolski. They can let him go.
Well, they have to qualify him. It's he made $3.8 million.
Did they qualify
him? I don't know if they've qualified him as a. I'll have to look at that. Check that up. But I mean, they have a lot of flexibility, what they want to do. You know, they need somebody on the back end. I mean, Kulikov's an RFA.
He'll get re-signed.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
you got to develop Kulikov, Drew. You got to develop Eric Goodbrandsen. They have, they've gone both ways. And they've had their, if you watch them over the course of the year, and we've seen them numerous times last year, they had some good games and some bad games, and that's youth, and they'll grow with that.
And Richie, they overachieved.
Wolski did not receive a qualifying offer.
They overachieved a little bit, but
overrated.
You know, Kevin Dineen did a great job with Florida, and you know, they're going to be in a situation where they only have to sign, again, a few depth players, and possibly, a winger. I mean, a guy that jumps out is maybe Semin as well, but I think there's going to be a few teams that spin the tires with Semin.
The difference in preaching patience with Florida as opposed to Winnipeg is that Florida's such a deeper system.
They missed the playoffs for 10 years, too.
Now, Winnipeg is more young town on the roster, at least offensively, but,
The system is not as deep.
Yeah.
Moving to their Florida cousins, Tampa Bay, you know, they've probably not going to be tremendously active. They have $20 million in cap space. Everybody's got $20 million in cap space.
They're kind of all signed up already, though.
Yeah, they'll get Lynn back. They got to get him under contract, but he's an RFA, so that's not going to be a problem.
Nope.
Maybe somebody on the back end, because their defense last year was atrocious.
Yeah, well, because Matthias Olin may or may not be done. I got thought Brian Lee got a little bit more money than I thought he would get.
$1.15 million.
You need to add a defenseman, Drew, on the back end, if not two.
Probably two.
Yeah, you need to add two, because Bergeron you can't count on defensively. Mikkelsen is a seventh, a good skater, but a seventh or eighth guy.
What about Matt Carl?
Brian Lee is a fringe sixth guy. Yeah, you need to add two defensemen on the back end here, minimum. Yeah.
And up front,
Matt Carl would be a good fit as a guy who can move the puck and skate well is always a good fit.
And everybody thought that Matt Carl was going to re-sign in Philly as a no-brainer, but
he wants a lot of money.
He's going to test UFA.
Well, it also depends on how interested the. I guess Suter said he's not going to go to Philly.
That's what he says. Yeah.
You know, Drew, Carl's a former Hobie Baker Award winner or finalist. Good defenseman. Again,
not great defensively.
We got to stress this again, Drew. It's not a good free agent market. So, I mean, a guy like Carl can get $5 or $6 million. If Weidman can get five, Carl can easily get five.
And we talked about the Capitals. That's the only other team.
Yeah, the Washington Capitals, who we spoke about with Joe Beninati. They'll be active.
Well, you know, I think they're going to want to replace Dennis Weidman. The truth is that John Carlson and Carl Alzner played against the toughest competition last year.
Yeah.
So you're going to want to add in...
By the playoffs, Dennis Weidman was playing third pairing.
Right, and you have Mike Green there. You're going to want to re-sign. You have Orlov, but you need to add another defenseman in the back end because they don't trust Schultz. At least the old coaches didn't. Yeah. Hammerlick's obviously not as fast, and I mean, Pody's on the roster, but he's done. So you want to add a defenseman, and if you lose Salmon, you want to add a scoring winger. So it's everybody's looking for very very much the same thing.
It's a very shallow pond that everybody is fishing in.
Hopefully, it turns into trades.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Kevin Allen of USA Today is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show NHL Free Agency Preview Special on TSN 1290. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
And let's welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's from the USA Today newspaper, Kevin Allen. Kevin, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
How are you?
Doing very well. How about yourself?
That's great. Feels sort of like the day before a holiday. Big news. I'm sure will happen tomorrow in the National Hockey League. And other than trade deadline day, there's probably not a more exciting day of the season.
I would agree wholeheartedly with that statement. Let's get right into it. Sidney Crosby re-signed with the Penguins earlier this week. Same average annual value, $8.7 million. How upset do you think the NHL is that Sidney Crosby didn't really demand a raise in his AAV?
Well, I mean, I think that's a fair question, but, you know, I remember years ago, right after the first labor strike, and, there was a suggestion that the PA wasn't happy with Ray Bourque's contract, and I did a story with him. I remember he said, wasn't that what we fought over, was the right to kind of control our own destiny? Isn't it within my prerogative to choose to play for less money, to stay in a place that I love? And I think, you know, that would be the argument for Crosby as well. If he wants to stay in Pittsburgh, if he's happy, he got a 12-year contract, even though he has had a couple major concussions. Pretty fair, trade-off, all things considered.
Kevin, Roberto Luongo signed through 2022 when he becomes a UFA. $5.3 million cap hit per year. Is there really a market for this guy, or is Mike Gillis use the media in just the right way to make it seem as though there is one?
Well, I think there is a market, but it's a very limited market. You know, I personally think it's, two teams. It's Florida, who has, a vested interest in, Luongo wants to play there. He's been there in the past. He was very popular. You know, they're still trying to sell tickets there. More importantly, Dale Talon has done a good job there, but, you know, in this off season, Carolina added Stahl, Washington added the center, Ribeiro. It seems like everybody's kind of loading up. And meanwhile, probably Florida's going to lose Garrison. So I think he feels probably like he needs to do something. I think they're content with their goaltending right now with Theodor. But I think clearly Luongo is a step up. And the biggest problem for them is not the cap hit at 5.33. It's the actual salary of $6.7 million because they're not a ceiling team. So I think they're legitimately in the hunt. I think they view it, though, as doing Vancouver a favor, and they don't want to give up a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that's not how Mike Gillis is looking at it. And then from Toronto's perspective, I don't think there's any doubt that, you know, Luongo clearly makes them a playoff team. You look at his career save percentage, he's never been lower than 913, and he's played on some poor teams in the past. And I think his career is like 919. Well, just use that save percentage and just plug it into where mm-hmm. Toronto's been the last couple of years, and I think you could see that he would have really made a big difference. But, you know, for Toronto to do that, it's a little bit hypocritical for, you know, Brian Burke, who has always been opposed to these long-term deals. And I'm sure he's struggling with that.
Kevin, in the last couple of days, we've learned that Marty Brodeur has hired an agent for the first time. In the past, he's just negotiated himself with Lou Lamoriello. If the New Jersey Devils can't sign Marty Brodeur, what chance do they have of signing Zach Parise? And as far as you're concerned, who are the top three suitors for Parise?
Well, I think they have zero chance of re-signing Parise, whether Brodeur signs or not. Well, but I mean, I just had the impression all season, and, you know, who knows, in the 11th hour, Lou Lamoriello is a pretty smooth talker. Who knows what can happen. But I think Parise had kind of made up his mind a while ago that this was going to be his last season. And, you know, I think there's still a shot that Brodeur will sign. I think Lamoriello, if I'm guessing, he assumed he had other eggs to fry and he wasn't paying attention to Brodeur, figuring they have had a long relationship, and I'll get to him, you know, late Saturday afternoon. And Brodeur hedged his bets by bringing in Brisson, which signals, hey, I'm serious about moving. And with regard to Parise, you know, I think Minnesota's home team is in the mix. I certainly believe Detroit is in the mix. You know, I've heard Los Angeles as well. He certainly knows a little bit about that team, more than he did last season now. If I had to guess, I'd guess it's going to be one of those three teams. Maybe Pittsburgh Penguins, I forgot them as well, so there's actually four teams.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Kevin Allen of USA Today. Kevin, the Rick Nash sweepstakes continues unabated. It's, I think, probably in about its 40th month at this point in time. You know,
yeah.
Is his destination largely dependent on who loses out on Zach Parise? And if you had to, you know, wager a guess, where do you see Rick Nash ending up?
Well, I think that's insightful analysis. I think the Parise sweepstakes does play a role in it. But I still believe, regardless of what happens, it's going to be the Rangers. You know, they're in the best position, in my opinion, to kind of satisfy what Columbus is trying to accomplish in terms of getting, you know, some younger players back, some players that can play now. And, you know, I think what makes the Rangers right now isn't necessarily their star power. It's the fact that they're a pretty cohesive team. They get a lot out of their defense. So I think, for example, they can give up a Delzato and still, you know, not lose their defensive balance. I think you know, Dubinsky could go into Columbus and play a role and help them and wouldn't affect the Rangers at all. So I think they have the ability to make that trade, and I think that'll happen. I think they just need, they're trying to get Columbus to back off a little bit. You know, they really want a lot for Nash. So I would think that the Rangers would be number one. I wouldn't rule out completely San Jose. Doug Wilson's a pretty good horse trader. But, you know, when I look at their mix, I just don't see they have the proper fit in terms of players they can send back.
We talk about forwards, Kevin, and, you know, there is Parise available, and, you know, we talk about Alexander Semin being available. We mentioned Nash. On defense, you have Ryan Suter and kind of everybody else. His market is going to be, he's going to have, I think, you know, probably 20 teams calling him. How do you see that coming about? There were some rumors earlier that he was only going to sign in the West. Do you think those are valid?
Not necessarily. What I think is that anybody who says they have the scoop on Ryan Suter is not being honest, because I don't think Ryan knows what he wants to do. I've talked to him a couple of times this season. I know him reasonably well. And, you know, basically, he likes it in Nashville. He always has. It's a market that's perfect for him. He is not a guy that likes the spotlight. You can hide a little bit in Nashville. He likes that. But he wants to win. And Nashville has certainly improved in that regard. A lot of people are tying him to Minnesota because it's not so far from his, you know, cottage and home in Wisconsin. But I think they would have to prove that they really are going to make dramatic strides this season. And I like where they're going. I think Charlie Coyle and Granlund, for example, are going to help this year. But they've really not given any indication that they're going to be dramatically rising this season. So even though a lot of people have Minnesota high on Suter's list, I'm not sure that I do. I think the front runner for Suter is Detroit. They're a major original six market. There's a lot of love of hockey in that town. They do not have a Toronto, New York, Montreal style of media. You know, they're not in a player's face all the time. Players have room to breathe there. So I think with Lidstrom leaving there, that seems like the perfect storm. If I had to guess, and I really am guessing, I would guess Detroit would be a front runner, and also don't rule out him going back to Nashville.
Kevin, about a week ago, the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Philadelphia Flyers made a deal, Toronto acquiring James Van Riemsdyk, and the Philadelphia Flyers obviously acquiring Luke Shen. How many teams were interested in James Van Riemsdyk? Because it seems like Toronto got a pretty good deal just having to give up Luke Shen to get him.
Yeah, I would agree with that assessment on that. I think there were a lot of teams interested. You know, he's kind of like, you kind of replaced Jason Spezza as the kind of the rumor of the week. You know, for about a 2-year span, there were always rumors about Spezza, and you know, before he was traded, it seems like Van Riemsdyk had taken over as the number one rumor monger in the league. And what's interesting about Van Riemsdyk is that obviously, when you look at his numbers on a per game basis, it looks pretty good. But he hasn't really done it yet in a full season, and I think that's the concern around the league. And they wonder, is he an elite level player or is he a streaky player? And I think Brian Burke believes that he's going to be, once he can stay healthy for a full season, he's going to be that 30-goal guy. And I thought it was a high reward, minimal risk type of trade for Toronto, because I think there is a lot of potential for Van Riemsdyk. And I think what you see, I like Luke Shen, actually, but I think what you see is what you get with him. I don't think there's going mm-hmm. to be he's suddenly going to be turned into Chris Pronger.
Kevin, Bobby Ryan's been in rumors. You mentioned Jason Spezza. Now, Bobby Ryan's been in rumors for months on end, and obviously last week he reached a boiling point and kind of went off about Bob Murray and the Ducks organization. And Bob Murray came out yesterday and said, his priority is to sign Ryan Getzlaff and Corey Perry to long-term deals. Is Ryan in the mix for the future, or is he on his way out if they can find the right fit in return?
Well, I think he is on his way out. I think they had sort of decided this last year, and I had the sense that actually it was kind of ownership that kind of thought, why are we trading a young player like So I think they'll make a trade for him, but Bob Murray is from the kind of the Brian Burke school, and that is that you make trades on your time, not everyone else's. So he will not be influenced by whether or not Bobby Ryan loves him or not. I think if he doesn't find the right deal, he's staying until they can find the right deal. And he wants a lot for him. I think he would have been traded at the draft. Philadelphia is very interested in him. He's a New Jersey kid. Mm-hmm. They really want him. Paul Holmgren likes him a lot. But, they want him, Braden Shen. And Paul Holmgren said, no, I don't think so. And so they weren't able to make a deal. So I still think Philadelphia is a... maybe likely is too strong, but I would say that the Flyers are a front runner for Bobby Ryan.
Kevin, years in the past, there's been college free agent defensemen, whether it be Matt Gilroy or some other players, and they were thought to be the second coming, really. Justin Schultz is getting even more press than those guys, and we're not sure if that's just because the day and age that we are now with Twitter and internet and all that stuff, or is he really that good? Can you kind of give us your take?
Yeah, that's another insightful question, and one that discussion I just had with my boss yesterday. I'm not sure that I can properly answer that. I sense that there is a more belief in this kid than the usual college free agent. But I it wasn't that long ago that we went to with the DaCosta sweepstakes, and everybody's talking about him too. Oh, this is a kid that. He's got some skill. He's certainly going to play in the league. And then I watched him at the pro level, and who knows what he's going to do. But he was a guy who was he isn't a can't miss player. So I don't know what to make of Schultz. People tell me, scouts tell me that he is well advanced for a player his age, and that there's a Depending on what kind of team he went to, he certainly could come in and contribute. That's what everybody tells me. So, you know, clearly there's a lot of interest in him, including from teams who are, you know, known to be kind of picky about who they bring into their organization.
Kevin, we'll let you go on this last question. The CBA negotiations sort of started yesterday. You know, how can the owners legitimately plead poverty when discussing a new CBA when they keep handing out, you know, ridiculous contracts that we've seen this week?
Well, because it's the nature of sports. Revenue grows, continues to grow. People keep buying, jerseys left and right, and everything is going good. The one problem that's unique to the NHL that doesn't probably get enough play is that, you know, revenue distribution is not democratic. And by that I mean, you know, sure it's growing, but, you know, it's growing because Toronto and New York and major markets are getting better local television deals. They're able to raise ticket prices. But it's not growing at the same rate in, Buffalo and Carolina, you know, Nashville. So, you know, there are some issues that result from that, including, the floor of the salary cap, for example, which makes it difficult for, teams to get to. You know, Florida, for example, struggles to get to the bottom of the New York Islanders. But saying all that, as I lay that all out, I mean, does that not sound like an issue that revenue sharing would fix? It sure seems that way to me. And I think, you know, that's certainly going to be an argument that the players are going to put forth, that the major issues that the league now has, and there are some significant ones, you know, certainly result from the fact that the revenue is not distributed equally, or at least there's no effort made among the owners. I mean, there are some. We have revenue sharing now, but it only affects 10 teams.
Right.
So, I think that your point is a valid one, and I think that the landscape in professional sports is give back now for players. You look what happened to the NBA, and you look what happened to the NFL. I think the 57% number for players, I think that's a little troublesome. You know, I think from the public relations value, most fans would say, well, that probably should be closer to 50-50. So it's going to be a real interesting negotiations. I don't think that the league is in bad shape. I think, you know, it'd be hard for them to say that it is, but I think they're going to try to get something back from the players. There's no doubt about that.
Kevin Allen from USA Today, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Call me anytime, guys.
Take care, Kevin.
Thanks a lot,
Kevin. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290. Big thank you to Kevin Allen of USA Today for joining us. Coming up in a few minutes' time, Aaron Portsline from the Columbus Dispatch. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve.
Northeast Division.
Northeast Division, let's start with the Boston Bruins as we go through this alphabetically. Yesterday, they re-signed Tuukka Rask to a one-year, $3.5 million deal.
I'm a little bit surprised that they didn't sign him to longer than that.
I'm curious about that, too. That jumps out at me as being a little bit curious.
Knowing that Tim Thomas is done there. Tim Thomas isn't going to play for that team again.
No.
I think they're worried that Rask will show up if they win the Cup again to meet whoever is president next year.
That's their concern. Boston won't be very active. They have the least amount of cap space in the NHL. They only have $277,000 in cap space.
Well, and so, the thing is,
granted, they'll get $5 million back if they get rid of Tim Thomas.
But they've locked up Krejci and Bergeron. The Boston Bruins again. I mean,
they have 13 forwards already under contract.
Yeah, you look.
And they have good forwards. The Boston Bruins' motivation was a big factor last year, more than anything. Yeah. At the end of the year,
there's a letdown. There's a post-cup letdown.
Look at the talent: Krejci, Bergeron. I mean,
they're still up the middle.
Sagan, up the middle.
They're still the best team, arguably. Maybe with the exception of
if they play Sagan in the middle, they're for sure
Flyers.
The best team up the middle.
Yeah.
Even if they're not, they still have a good team because they can go up the middle. They can go with Krejci and Bergeron and Campbell and Kelly. They can put Sagan on the wing.
Kelly re-signed as well, Drew.
That's right. They re-signed. Yeah. And they'll actually have about $9 million in cap room, assuming they get rid of Tim Thomas
that's a big assumption, Drew.
Well, that's a big assumption, but what they're definitely going to do, they'll put Mark Savard back on long-term injury reserve.
If you're, do they need to do anything? I mean, if they're going to bring Dougie Hamilton up next year, do they need to do anything?
That's a good point.
On defense, I don't
Dougie
think so.
Hamilton.
Well, that's their only
I believe
weakness,
went.
Really.
Did he not go ninth?
Yeah, he went after the Jets. It went Shifley, Couturier, Hamilton.
Yeah, we were talking to Kevin Allen about what scouts were telling him about Justin Schultz, and I hope we get into that later because I think the Justin Schultz thing is completely ridiculous and blown out of proportion. I think I understand that these teams want him, but I'll be surprised if he turns out to be anything more than a 35 or 40 point defenseman. If that's the case, I think you can probably find another guy to get that.
Those aren't grown trees though, Ezzy. The appeal to Schultz, before we get into it later, is that he doesn't cost you anything.
That's right.
And
it's
everybody
money.
And it's not a bidding war. People don't understand that. It's not a bidding war. It's a 2-year entry level deal.
Yep.
So everybody's offering the same amount of money. The question is, what's the most appealing place? So you get him cost control, and you don't give up anything. That's the appeal. Obviously, the talent is the appeal, of course, as well.
You're getting a first-round draft pick for free.
Basically.
Yeah. That's basically what it works out.
Well, free, $2 million.
Well, I think it's about 3.5, I think, is what they're going to say.
No, but that's bonus included.
Oh, including bonuses, of course.
He has to reach them.
You're going to give a guy that's never done anything in the NHL $3.5 million?
Well, it's bonuses. So if he reaches those, then you're paying him what he's worth. Anyhow. Let's go back to what we were talking about.
Well, I mean, Boston, you don't expect to be tremendously active. They've locked up their core. They've done what they needed to do.
Yeah.
Well, Chara plays half the game, so you really only need you only need four defensemen.
And you can throw Dougie Hamilton on there, and I mean, Dennis Seidenberg's obviously turned into a nice defenseman. Yeah. Could they use one more defense, and Boychuk as well, I do like the way he's turned into a good defenseman. Could they use one more D-man, even with, if they bring up Hamilton? Yeah, probably. But the money that they have available will be able to fill that need.
Scouts, I wanted to say that too, because we got a little bit sidetracked, but you know, Kevin Allen talking about Justin Schultz, but scouts on Dougie Hamilton think that he might be the best defenseman in that draft, and he was drafted ninth overall. Yes. That's how high, and people remember him and his brother were on the junior team and how well Dougie Hamilton played in the World Junior Tournament. So, I mean, Boston, there's only a few teams going into tomorrow that are basically set. They're one of them. I'd say maybe Philly. There's a few teams.
Yeah.
And they don't have to do much. And the thing is, Drew, Philly and Boston are one of the best destinations for a free agent too. So they're really strong right now.
They're in a position of strength, certainly. The Buffalo Sabres, they were beyond active at last year's free agency and right before it acquiring contract rights. Don't expect them to be as active this year. They have about $11 million in cap space. They're another team that is, you know, they're going to need to add some depth to their forward group.
Size, I think. You know, Drew, I mean, there's been Derek...
They lost Gostad.
There's been Derek Roy rumors for a while here, but if you look at the Buffalo Sabres up front. Thomas Vanek's a big guy. Does he play huge? I mean, you could argue that. But Thomas Vanek is a bigger guy. Drew Stafford is a bigger guy. But then you get into Pominville. Doesn't necessarily play big. Leno's a smaller guy. Roy's a smaller guy. Cody Hartson's a smaller guy. Nathan Gerby's tiny. So you need to add, and Tyler Ennis, who's a beautiful player, but he's tiny as well. You need to add size up front.
And they're not bringing boys back from all we've heard.
Well, yeah, and they're not bringing boys back. And then on the back end, I mean, you have size and Tyler Myers and Robin Regier and Ehrhoff. Those are bigger guys. And then you have puck mover like Leopold. Their back end, they could probably... I see them doing more up front than on the back end. And obviously they have Ryan Miller and Nett.
Yeah.
So I think if you're Buffalo, they've been looking to trade Derek Roy. That's the rumor. He's a pending UFA after this upcoming season. Maybe you turn him and something else into a bigger forward up front because you need to get bigger and meaner. You do.
And that's when they traded Zach Cassian for Cody Hodgson at the deadline. That was they lost that size that Cassian brought. And
still think that was a good move.
But I mean, you're hoping to have replaced Derek Roy
when
you deal him with that second line center being Hodgson.
I think that was a good deal for Buffalo.
They need to re-sign Tyler Ennis. He's an RFA, so they'll take care of that sometime.
I mean, Roy kind of playing first line. Yeah, Tyler Ennis, sure. And that's probably a little bit difficult. Patrick Coletta, too, for a guy who's provides some value to them.
Yeah.
But overall, there's a nice talent base there. The question is it the right mix?
Buffalo was very close to making the playoffs. Let's not forget about that.
They had a brutal season, Ezzy. They had too much time.
They waited till the end of the second half of the season to get serious.
The Montreal Canadiens yesterday re-signed Travis Moen 4 years, $1.85 million per year.
Yep.
Really doesn't make sense to anybody.
Well, at times last year, the best forwards on the Montreal Canadiens were Travis Moen, Matthew Darche, and David Desharnais. I mean, let's not forget how bad some of those forwards played for Montreal last year.
They were brutal. But Travis Moen, I like his game. He can kill penalties. He can play third or fourth line kind of thing. It's like a 10-goal guy maximum, really.
Always has been. Saskatchewan boy, I believe.
4 years. I mean, he signed for
2 years at that, you can live with it. But it's four years.
Even three. Like, three is kind of like that tipping point, isn't it, Drew? 3 years. He signed for more money than Maxim Talbot. Talbot scored. You know, Talbot is a guy who you probably want to compare him to, left-handed shooting guy who plays the wing generally. You know, Talbot kind of played fourth line left wing this year for Philly because they were so deep. Yeah. So you compare Moen to Talbot, and you have Moen being 30 years old, signs a 4-year deal. You know, how did he get more money than Max Talbot? The only argument would be that the salaries continue to rise, but it just seems odd that that's what they thought would be needed to sign him.
Travis
Why not a
Moen
3-year deal?
He's had, the highest goal total he's had is 11, which was 2006, 2007 with the Anaheim Ducks. Shout out to Remus behind the glass.
He's a penalty killer, checker, third liner, and he was really good on the Ducks when they won the Cup. Just quickly, Drew, the Montreal...
That was 6 years ago.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. The Montreal Canadiens are an interesting team to me because you've got to sign P.K. Subban and Carey Price, and then you've got to figure out what you're going to do with Scott Gomez's big contract. That's an albatross at this point. So until you deal with Price, Subban, and Gomez, what do you do? The Habs, to me, are a mystery what they're going to do because they need scoring.
They have $22 million in salary cap space. A lot of that will go to P.K. Subban and Carey Price.
Absolutely.
Right. And then everything else,
the question is, do you throw Gomez down and then have $7 million of cap space to spend on free agents?
They need a defenseman too, Richie. I mean, Markov, there's too many question marks with him, and he's got a long-term deal. So Bergevin has work to do.
He's got to sign Emelin and Diaz, and obviously Subban's in there too, guys. Do they want to add another kind of big bruising guy? Well, I mean, Emelin plays a tough game, and so does Georges. You probably want one more guy, although Subban does too. I'm not so sure. You probably want another quality defenseman because you want to make sure that if Markov goes down again, you're not playing Cabrera in your top four, guys like that, and you're allowing Diaz and Emelin, guys like that, to move in slowly.
Exactly right. We'll get to Ottawa and Toronto a little bit later on in the program. Let's go to break. When we come back, Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch is going to join us, update us on everything Columbus Blue Jackets and Rick Nash related. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show NHL Free Agency Preview Special on TSN 1290.